This information doesn't leave this room, Aelin said. Calm, calculating. Already sorting through every plan. The other side of their fair coin. It's ultimately your choice, Adian, whether to approach Gavriel. But we have enough enemies gathering around us as it is. I don't need to start a war with Maeve. But she would. She would go to war for him. He saw it in her eyes. It nearly knocked the breath from him. Along with the thought of what the carnage would be like on both sides, if the Dark Queen and the heir of Mala Firebringer collided. It stays with us, Adian managed to say. He could feel Rowan assessing and weighing him, and bit back a snarl. Slowly, Adian lifted his gaze to meet the prince's. The sheer dominance in that stare was like being hit in the face with a stone. Adian held it. Like hell he'd back down. Like hell he'd yield. And there would be a yielding. Somewhere. At some point. Probably when Adian took that blood oath. Aelin clicked her tongue at Rowan. Stop doing that alpha male nonsense. Once was enough. Rowan didn't so much as blink.
I'm not doing anything.
But the prince's mouth corked into a smile, as if saying to Adian,
You think you can take me, cub?
Adian grinned. Any place, any time, prince. Aelin muttered, Insufferable, and gave Rowan a playful shove in the arm. He didn't move an inch. Are you actually going to get into a pissing contest with every person we meet? Because if that's the case, then it'll take us an hour just to make it down one block of this city, and I doubt the residents will be particularly happy. Adian fought the urge to take a deep breath as Rowan broke his stare to give their queen an incredulous look. She crossed her arms, waiting.
It'll take time to adjust to a new dynamic, Rowan admitted.
Not an apology, but from what Aelin had told him, Rowan didn't often bother with such things. She looked downright shocked by the small concession, actually. Adian tried to lounge in his chair, but his muscles were taut, his blood thrumming in his veins. He found himself saying to the prince,
Aelin never said anything about sending for you.
Does she answer to you, General?
A dangerous, quiet question. Adian knew that when males like Rowan spoke softly, it usually meant violence and death were on their way. Aelin rolled her eyes.
You know he didn't mean it that way, so don't pick a fight, you prick.
Adian stiffened. He could fight his own battles. If Aelin thought he needed protecting, if she thought Rowan was the superior warrior. Rowan said,
I'm bloodsworn to you, which means several things, one of which being that I don't particularly care for the questioning of others, even your cousin.
The words echoed in his head, his heart.
Bloodsworn?
Aelin went pale. Adian asked,
What did he just say?
Rowan had taken the blood oath to Aelin.
His blood oath.
Aelin squared her shoulders and said clearly, steadily, Rowan took the blood oath to me before I left Wendland. A roaring sound went through him.
You let him do what?
Aelin exposed her scarred palms.
As far as I knew, Adian, you were loyally serving the king.
As far as I knew, I was never going to see you again.
You let him take the blood oath to you?
Adian bellowed. She had lied to his face that day on the roof. He had to get out of his skin, out of this apartment, out of this god's damned city. Adian lunged for one of the porcelain figurines atop the hearth mantle, needing to shatter something to just get that roaring out of his system. She flung out a vicious finger, advancing on him.
You break one thing, you shatter just one of my possessions, and I will shove the shards down your rotting throat.
A command, from a queen to her general. Adian spat on the floor, but obeyed, if only because ignoring that command might very well shatter something far more precious. He instead said,
How dare you? How dare you let him take it?
I dare because it is my blood to give away. I dare because you did not exist for me then. Even if neither of you had taken it yet, I would still give it to him because he is my Kheranam, and he has earned my unquestioning loyalty.
Adian went rigid. And what about our unquestioning loyalty?
What have you done to earn that? What have you done to save our people since you've returned? Were you ever going to tell me about the Blood Oath, or was that just another of your many lies?
Aelin snarled with an animalistic intensity that reminded him she, too, had Fey blood in her veins.
Go have your temper tantrum somewhere else. Don't come back until you can act like a human being, or half of one, at least.
Adian swore at her, a filthy, foul curse that he immediately regretted. Rowan lunged for him, knocking back his chair hard enough to flip it over. But Aelin threw out a hand. The prince stood down. That easily she leashed the mighty immortal warrior. Adian laughed, the sound brittle and cold, and smiled at Rowan in a way that usually made men throw the first punch. But Rowan just set his chair upright, sat down, and leaned back, as if he already knew where he'd strike Adian's death blow. Aelin pointed at the door.
Get the hell out. I don't want to see you again for a good while.
The feeling was mutual. All his plans, everything he'd worked for. Without the Blood Oath, he was just a general. Just a landless prince of the Ash River line.
Adian stalked to the front door and flung it open so hard he almost ripped it off its hinges.
Aelin didn't call after him. Chapter 29 Rowan Whitethorn debated for a good minute if it was worthwhile to hunt down the demi-fey prince and tear him into bloody ribbons for what he'd called Aelin, or if he was better off here with his queen, while she paced in front of her bedroom fireplace. He understood, he really did, why the general was enraged. He'd have felt the same, but it wasn't a good enough excuse. Not even close. Perched on the edge of the plush mattress, he watched her move. Even without her magic, Aelin was a living wildfire, more so now with the red hair. A creature of such roaring emotions that he could sometimes only watch her and marvel. And her face. That god's damned face. While they'd been in Wendlin, it had taken him a while to realize she was beautiful. Months, actually, to really notice it. And for these past few weeks, against his better judgment, he'd thought often about that face, especially that smart-ass mouth. But he hadn't remembered just how stunning she was until she'd taken off her hood earlier, and it had struck him stupid. These weeks apart had been a brutal reminder of what life had been like, until he had found her drunk and broken on that rooftop in Verez. The nightmares had started the very night she'd left. Such relentless dreams that he'd nearly vomited when he flung himself out of them, Lyria's screaming ringing in his ears. The memory of it sent cold licking down his spine. But even that was burned away by the queen before him. Aelin was well on her way to wearing a track in the rug before the fireplace.
If that's any indication of what to expect from our court, Rowan said at last,
flexing his fingers in an attempt to dislodge the hollow shakiness he hadn't been able to master since his magic had been smothered.
Then we'll never have a dull moment.
She flung out a hand in a dismissive wave of irritation.
Don't tease me right now.
She scrubbed at her face and huffed a breath. Rowan waited, knowing she was gathering the words, hating the pain and sorrow and guilt on every line of her body. He'd sell his soul to the dark god to never have her look like that again.
Every time I turn around, she said,
approaching the bed and leaning against the carved post,
I feel like I'm one wrong move or word away from leading them to ruin. People's lives, your life, depend on me. There's no room for error.
There it was, the weight that had been slowly crushing her. It killed him that he'd have to add to it when he told her the news he carried, the reason he'd disobeyed her first order to him. He could offer her nothing but the truth.
You will make mistakes. You will make decisions, and sometimes you will regret those choices. Sometimes there won't be a right choice, just the best of several bad options. I don't need to tell you that you can do this. You know you can. I wouldn't have sworn the oath to you if I didn't think you could.
She slid onto the bed beside him, her scent caressing him. Jasmine and lemon verbena and crackling embers. Elegant, feminine, and utterly wild. Warm and steadfast. Unbreakable. His queen.
save for the weakness they both shared, that bond between them. For in his nightmares, he sometimes heard Maeve's voice over the crack of a whip, cunning and cold.
Not for all the world, Aelin. But what about for Prince Rowan?
He tried not to think about it. The fact that Aelin would hand over one of the word keys for him. He locked that knowledge up so tightly that it could escape only in his dreams, or when he woke reaching across a cold bed for a princess who was thousands of miles away. Aelin shook her head.
It was so much easier being alone.
I know,
he said, clamping down on the instinct to sling his arm around her shoulders and tuck her in close. He focused on listening to the city around them instead. He could hear more than mortal ears, but the wind no longer sang its secrets to him. He no longer felt it tugging at him, and stuck in his fey body, unable to shift, caged, restless, made worse by the fact that he couldn't shield this apartment from any enemy attacks while they were here. Not powerless, he reminded himself. He had been bound head to toe in iron before and had still killed. He could keep this apartment secure. The old-fashioned way. He was just off balance, at a time when being off balance could be fatal to her. For a while, they sat there in silence.
I said some appalling things to him, she said.
Don't worry about it,
he said, unable to help the growl.
He said some equally appalling things to you. Your tempers are evenly matched.
She let out a breathy chuckle.
Tell me about the fortress. What it was like when you went back to help rebuild.
So he did. Until he got to the knowledge he'd been holding in all night. Just say it, she said with a direct, unyielding sort of look. He wondered if she realized that for all she complained about his alpha nonsense, she was pure-blooded alpha herself. Rowan took a long breath.
Lorkin's here.
She straightened.
That's why you came.
Rowan nodded. And why keeping his distance was the smarter move. Lorkin was wicked and cunning enough to use their bond against them.
I caught his scent sneaking around near Mistward and tracked it to the coast, then onto a ship. I picked up his trail when I docked this evening.
Her face was pale, and he added,
I made sure to cover my tracks before hunting you down.
Over 5 centuries old, Lorkin was the strongest male in the Fey realm, equal only to Rowan himself. They'd never been true friends, and after the events of a few weeks ago, Rowan would have liked nothing more than to slit the male's throat for leaving Aelin to die at the hands of the Vogue princes. He might very well get the chance to do that. Soon.
He doesn't know you well enough to immediately pick up your scent,
Rowan went on.
I bet good money that he got on that boat just to drag me here so I'd lead him to you.
But it was better than letting Lorkin find her while he remained in Wendlin. Aelin swore with creative colorfulness.
Maeve probably thinks we'll also lead him right to the third word key.
Do you think she gave him the order to put us down, either to get the key or afterward?
Maybe.
The thought was enough to shoot icy rage through him.
I won't let that happen.
Her mouth quirked to the side.
You think I could take him?
If you had your magic, possibly.
Irritation rippled in her eyes, enough so that he knew something else nagged at her.
But without magic, in your human form, you'd be dead before you could draw your sword.
He's that good.
He gave her a slow nod. She looked him over with an assassin's eye. Could you take him?
It'd be so destructive I wouldn't risk it. You remember what I told you about Solomare?
Her face tightened at the mention of the city he and Lorkin had obliterated at Maeve's request nearly 2 centuries ago. It was a stain that would forever linger, no matter what he told himself about how corrupt and evil its residents had been.
Without our magic, it's hard to call who'd win. It would depend on who wanted it more.
Lorkin, with his unending cold rage, and a talent for killing gifted to him by Hellas himself, never allowed himself to lose. Battles, riches, females. Lorkin always won, at any cost. Once, Rowan might have let him win. Let Lorkin end him just to put a stop to his own miserable life. But now,
Lorkin makes a move against you, and he dies.
She didn't blink at the violence that laced every word. Another part of him. A part that had been knotted from the moment she left. Uncoiled like some wild animal stretching out before a fire. Aelin cocked her head. Any idea where he'd hide?
None. I'll start hunting him tomorrow.
No, she said. Lorcan will easily find us without you hunting him. But if he expects me to lead him to the third key so he can bring it back to Maeve, then maybe... He could almost see the wheels turning in her head. She let out a hum. I'll think about that tomorrow. Do you think Maeve wants the key merely to keep me from using it? Or to use it herself?
You know the answer to that.
Both, then. Aelin sighed. The question is, will she try to use us to hunt down the other two keys? Or does she have another one of your cadre out searching for them now?
Let's hope she hasn't sent anyone else.
If Gavriel knew that Adian is his son... She glanced toward the bedroom door, guilt and pain flickering on her lovely features. Would he follow Maeve? Even if it meant hurting or killing Adian in the process? Is her control over him that strong? It had been a shock earlier to realize whose son lounged at the kitchen table.
Gavriel.
He'd seen the warrior with lovers over the centuries, and seen him leave them at Maeve's order. He'd also seen him ink the names of his fallen men onto his flesh. And of all his cadre, only Gavriel had stopped that night to help Aelin against the Volg. Don't answer now, Aelin cut in with a yawn. We should go to bed. Rowan had surveyed every inch of the apartment within moments of arriving, but he asked as casually as he could,
Where should I sleep?
She patted the bed behind them, just like old times. He clenched his jaw. He'd been bracing himself for this all night, for weeks now.
It's not like the fortress, where no one thinks twice about it.
And what if I want you to stay in here with me? He didn't allow those words to sink in fully, the idea of being in that bed. He'd worked too damn hard at shutting out those thoughts.
Then I'll stay, on the couch. But you need to be clear to the others about what me staying in here means.
There were so many lines that needed to be held. She was off limits, completely off limits, for about a dozen different reasons. He'd thought he would be able to deal with it, but...
No,
he would deal with it. He'd find a way to deal with it. Because he wasn't a fool, and he had some goddamned self-control. Now that Lorcan was in Rifthold, tracking them, hunting for the word key, he had bigger things to worry about. She shrugged, irreverent as always. Then I'll issue a royal decree about my honorable intentions toward you over breakfast. Rowan snorted. Though he didn't want to, he said,
And... The captain.
What about him? She said too sharply.
Just consider how he might interpret things.
Why? She'd done an excellent job of not mentioning him at all. But there was enough anger, enough pain in that one word, that Rowan couldn't back down.
Tell me what happened.
She didn't meet his eyes. He said what occurred here, to my friends, to him and Dorian while I was away in Wendland. That it was my fault, and that I was a monster. For a moment, a blinding, blistering wrath shot through him. It was instinct to lunge for her hand, to touch the face that remained downturned. But he held himself in check. She still didn't look at him as she said, Do you think...
Never,
he said.
Never, Aelin.
At last she met his stare, with eyes that were too old, too sad and tired to be 19. It had been a mistake to ever call her a girl, and there were indeed moments when Rowan forgot how young she truly was. The woman before him shouldered burdens that would break the spine of someone 3 times her age.
If you're a monster, I'm a monster,
he said with a grin broad enough to show off his elongated canines. She let out a rough laugh, close enough that it warmed his face. Just sleep in the bed, she said. I don't feel like digging up bedding for the couch. Maybe it was the laugh, or the silver lining her eyes, but he said,
Fine.
Fool. He was such a stupid fool when it came to her. He made himself add,
But it sends a message, Aelin.
She lifted her brows in a way that usually meant fire was going to start flickering. But none came. Both of them were trapped in their bodies, stranded without magic. He'd adapt.
He'd endure.
Oh?
She purred, and he braced himself for the tempest. And what message does it send? That I'm a whore? As if what I do in the privacy of my own room with my body is anyone's concern.
You think I don't agree?
His temper slipped its leash. No one else had ever been able to get under his skin so fast, so deep in the span of a few words.
But things are different now, Aelin. You're a queen of the realm. We have to consider how it looks, what impact it might have on our relationships with people who find it to be improper. Explaining that it's for your safety.
Oh, please, my safety? You think Lorkin or the king or whoever the hell else has it in for me is going to slither through the window in the middle of the night? I can protect myself, you know.
Gods above, I know you can.
He'd never been in doubt of that.
Her nostrils flared. This is one of the stupidest fights we've ever had.
All thanks to your idiocy, I might add.
She stalked toward her closet, her hips swishing as if to accentuate every word as she snapped,
Just get in bed.
He loosed a tight breath as she and those hips vanished into the closet. Boundaries, lines, off limits. Those were his new favorite words, he reminded himself, as he grimaced at the silken sheets, even as the huff of her breath still touched his cheek.
Aelin heard the bathroom door close, then running water, as Rowan washed up with the toiletries she'd left out for him.
Not a monster. Not for what she'd done. Not for her power. Not when Rowan was there.
She'd thank the gods every damn day for the small mercy of giving her a friend who was her match, her equal, and who would never look at her with horror in his eyes, no matter what happened. She'd always be grateful for that.
But improper?
Improper, indeed. He didn't know how improper she could be. She opened the top drawer of the oak dresser and slowly smiled. Rowan was in bed by the time she strutted toward the bathroom. She heard, rather than saw, him jolt upright, the mattress groaning as he barked,
What in hell is that?
She kept going toward the bathroom, refusing to apologize or look down at the pink, delicate, very short lace nightgown. When she emerged, face washed and clean, Rowan was sitting up, arms crossed over his bare chest.
You forgot the bottom part.
She merely blew out the candles in the room one by one. His eyes tracked her the entire time.
There is no bottom part,
she said, flinging back the covers on her side.
It's starting to get so hot, and I hate sweating when I sleep.
Plus, you're practically a furnace, so it's either this or I sleep naked.
You can sleep in the bathtub if you have a problem with it.
His growl rattled the room.
You've made your point.
She slid into bed beside him, a healthy, proper distance away. For a few heartbeats, there was only the sound of rustling blankets as she nestled down.
I need to fill in the ink a bit more in a few places,
he said flatly. She could barely see his face in the dark.
What?
Your tattoo,
he said, staring at the ceiling.
There are a few spots I need to fill in at some point.
Of course. He wasn't like other men. Not even close.
There was so little she could do to jar him, taunt him. A naked body was a naked body. Especially hers.
Fine,
she said, turning so that her back was to him. They were silent again. Then Rowan said,
I've never seen clothing like that.
She rolled over.
You mean to tell me the females in Doranelle don't have scandalous night clothes?
Or anywhere else in the world?
His eyes gleamed like an animal's in the dark.
She'd forgotten what it was like to be Fae, to have one foot always in the forest.
My encounters with other females usually didn't involve parading around in night clothes.
And what clothes did they involve?
Usually none at all.
She clicked her tongue, shoving away the image.
Having had the utter delight of meeting Ramel this spring, I have a hard time believing she didn't subject you to clothing parades.
He turned his face toward the ceiling again.
We're not talking about this.
She chuckled. Aelin 1, Rowan 0. She was still smiling when he asked.
Are all your night clothes like that?
So curious about my negligees, Prince. Whatever would the others say? Maybe you should issue a decree to clarify.
He growled, and she grinned into her pillow.
Yes, I have more. Don't worry. If Lorgan is going to murder me in my sleep, I might as well look good.
Vain until the bitter end.
She pushed back against the thought of Lorcan, of what Maeve might want, and said, Is there a specific color you'd like me to wear? If I'm going to scandalize you, I should at least do it in something you like.
You're a menace.
She laughed again, feeling lighter than she had in weeks, despite the news Rowan had given her. She was fairly certain they were done talking for the night, when his voice rumbled across the bed.
Gold, not yellow. Real metallic gold.
You're out of luck, she said into her pillow. I would never own anything so ostentatious. She could almost feel him smiling at her as she fell asleep. 30 minutes later, Rowan was still staring up at the ceiling, teeth gritted as he calmed the roaring in his veins that was steadily shredding through his self-control. That goddamned nightgown. Shit. He was in such deep, unending shit. Rowan was asleep, his massive body half covered with blankets, as dawn streamed in through the lace curtains. Silently rising, Aelin stuck out her tongue at him as she shrugged on her pale blue silk robe, tied her already fading red hair into a knot atop her head, and padded into the kitchen. Until the shadow market had been burned to cinders, that miserable merchant there had been making a small fortune off all the bricks of dye she'd kept buying. Aelin winced at the thought of having to track down that vendor again. The woman had seemed the sort who would have escaped the flames, and would now charge double, triple on her already overpriced dyes to make up for her lost goods. And since Lorcan could track her by scent alone, changing the color of her hair would have no impact on him. Though she supposed that with the King's Guard on the lookout for her. Oh, it was too damn early to consider the giant pile of horse shit that had become her life. Groggy, she made tea mostly by muscle memory. She started on toast and prayed they had eggs left in the cooling box. They did. And bacon, to her delight. In this house, food tended to vanish as soon as it came in. One of the biggest pigs of all approached the kitchen on immortal silent feet. She braced herself as, arms full of food, she nudged the small cooling box shut with a hip. Adian eyed her warily while she went to the small counter beside the stove and began pulling down bowls and utensils.
There are mushrooms somewhere, he said.
Good. Then you can clean and cut them. And you get to chop the onion.
Is that punishment for last night?
She cracked the eggs one by one into a bowl. If that's what you think is an acceptable punishment, sure.
And is making breakfast at this ungodly hour your self-imposed punishment?
I'm making breakfast because I'm sick of you burning it and making the whole house smell. Adian laughed quietly, and came up beside her to begin slicing the onion. You stayed on the roof the whole time you were out, didn't you? She yanked an iron skillet from the rack over the stove, set it on a burner, and chucked a thick pat of butter onto its dark surface.
You kicked me out of the apartment, but not the warehouse.
So I figured I might as well make myself useful and take watch.
The twisty, bendy, old ways manner of warping orders. She wondered what the old ways had to say about queenly propriety. She grabbed a wooden spoon and pushed the melting butter around a bit. We both have atrocious tempers. You know I didn't mean what I said. About the loyalty thing. Or about the half-human thing. You know none of that matters to me. Gavriel's son. Holy gods. But she would keep her mouth shut about it until Adian felt like broaching the subject.
Aelin, I'm ashamed of what I said to you.
Well, that makes two of us, so let's leave it at that. She whisked the eggs, keeping an eye on the butter. I understand, Adian, I really do, about the blood oath. I knew what it meant to you. I made a mistake not telling you. I don't normally admit to that kind of thing, but I should have told you, and I'm sorry. He sniffed at the onions, his expert slicing leaving a neat heap of them on one end of the cutting board, and then started on the small brown mushrooms,
That oath meant everything to me.
Ren and I used to be at each other's throats because of it when we were children. His father hated me because I was the one favored to take it.
She took the onions from him and chucked them into the butter, sizzling, filling the kitchen. There's nothing that says you can't take the oath, you know. Maeve has several Bloodsworn members in her court,
who are now making Aelin's life a living hell.
You can take it, and so can Ren. Only if you want to, but I won't be upset if you don't want to.
In Terrasen, there was only one.
She stirred the onions. Things change. New traditions for a new court. You can swear it right now, if you wish.
Adian finished the mushrooms and set down the knife as he leaned against the counter.
Not now. Not until I see you crowned. Not until we can be in front of a crowd. In front of the world.
She dumped in the mushrooms. You're even more dramatic than I am.
Adian snorted. Hurry up with the eggs. I'm going to die of starvation.
Make the bacon, or you don't get to eat any.
Adian could hardly move fast enough.
Chapter 30. There was a room deep below the stone castle that the demon lurking inside him liked to visit. The demon prince even let him out sometimes, through the eyes that might once have been his. It was a room cloaked in endless night, or maybe the darkness was from the demon. But they could see. They had always been able to see in the blackness. Where the demon prince had come from, so little light existed that it had learned to hunt in the shadows. There were pedestals arranged in the round room in an elegant curve, each topped with a black pillow, and on each pillow sat a crown. Kept down here like trophies. Kept in darkness, like him. A secret room. The prince stood in the center of it, surveying the crowns. The demon had taken control of the body completely. He'd let him, after that woman with the familiar eyes had failed to kill him. He waited for the demon to leave the room, but the demon prince spoke instead, a hissing, cold voice that came from between the stars, speaking to him, only to him.
The crowns of the conquered nations,
the demon prince said.
More will be added soon. Perhaps the crowns of other worlds, too.
He did not care.
You should care. You will enjoy it as we rip the realms to shreds.
He backed away, tried to retreat into a pocket of darkness where even the demon prince couldn't find him.
The demon laughed. Spineless human. No wonder she lost her head.
He tried to shut out the voice. Tried to. He wished that woman had killed him. Chapter 31. Manon stormed into Parrington's massive war tent, shoving aside the heavy canvas flap so violently that her iron nails slashed through the material. Why are my 13 being denied access to the Yellowlegs' coven? Explain. Now. As the last word snapped out of her, Manon stopped dead. Standing in the center of the dim tent, the Duke whirled toward her, his face dark and, Manon had to admit with a thrill, a bit terrifying. Get out, he said, his eyes flaring like embers. But Manon's attention was fixed on what, who, stood beyond the Duke. Manon stepped forward, even as the Duke advanced on her. Her black, filmy dress like woven night. Keltane was facing a kneeling, trembling young soldier, her pale hand outstretched toward his contorted face. And all over her, an unholy aura of dark fire burned.
What is that? Manon said.
Out! The Duke barked, and actually had the nerve to lunge for Manon's arm. She swiped with her iron nails, sidestepping the Duke without so much as glancing at him. All her focus, every pore of her, was pinned on the dark-haired lady. The young soldier, one of Parrington's own, was silently sobbing as tendrils of that black fire floated from Keltane's fingertips and slithered over his skin, leaving no marks. The human turned pain-filled gray eyes to Manon. Please, he mouthed. The Duke snatched for Manon again
and she darted past him. Explain this. You do not give orders, wing leader,
the Duke snapped.
Now get out.
What is that? Manon repeated.
The Duke searched for her, but then a silken female voice breathed.
Shadow fire.
Parrington froze, as if surprised she had spoken.
Where does this shadow fire come from?
Manon demanded. The woman was so small, so thin. The dress was barely more than cobwebs and shadows. It was cold in the mountain camp, even for Manon. Had she refused a cloak, or did they just not care? Or perhaps, with this fire, perhaps she did not need one at all.
From me,
Caltaine said, in a voice that was dead and hollow and yet vicious.
It has always been there, asleep, and now it has been awoken, shaped anew.
What does it do? Manon said.
The Duke had stopped to observe the young woman, like he was figuring out some sort of puzzle, like he was waiting for something else.
Caltaine smiled faintly at the soldier shaking on the ornate red carpet, his golden-brown hair shimmering in the light of the dimmed lantern above him.
It does this,
she whispered, and curled her delicate fingers.
The shadow fire shot from her hand and wrapped around the soldier like a second skin. He opened his mouth in a silent scream, convulsing and thrashing, tipping his head back to the ceiling of the tent, and sobbing in quiet, unheard agony. But no burns marred his skin, as if the shadow fire summoned only pain, as if it tricked the body into thinking it was being incinerated. Manon didn't take her eyes away from the man spasming on the carpet, tears of blood now leaking from his eyes, his nose, his ears. Quietly, she asked the Duke, "Why are you torturing him? Is he a rebel spy?" Now the Duke approached Caltaine, peering at her blank, beautiful face. Her eyes were wholly fixed on the young man, enthralled. She spoke again.
"No, just a simple man."
No inflection. No sign of empathy.
"Enough,"
the Duke said, and the fire vanished from Caltaine's hand. The young man sagged on the carpet, panting and weeping. The Duke pointed to the curtains in the back of the tent, which no doubt concealed a sleeping area.
"Lie down."
Like a doll, like a ghost, Caltaine turned, that midnight gown swirling with her, and stalked toward the heavy red curtains, slipping through them as if she were no more than mist. The Duke walked over to the young man and knelt before him on the ground. The captive lifted his head, blood and tears mingling on his face. But the Duke's eyes met Manon's as he put his massive hands on either side of his soldier's face and snapped his neck. The death crunch shuddered through Manon like the twanging of a harp. Normally, she would have chuckled. But for a heartbeat, she felt warm, sticky blue blood on her hands, felt the hilt of her knife imprinted against her palm as she gripped it hard and slashed it across the throat of that Kraken. The soldier slumped to the carpet as the Duke rose.
"What is it that you want, Blackbeak?"
Like the Kraken's death, this had been a warning. Keep her mouth shut. But she planned to write to her grandmother, planned to tell her everything that had happened. This, and that the Yellowlegs' coven hadn't been seen or heard from since entering the chamber beneath the keep. The matron would fly down here and start shredding spines. "I want to know why we have been blocked from the Yellowlegs' coven. They are under my jurisdiction, and as such I have the right to see them."
"It was successful. That's all you need to know."
"You're to tell your guards immediately to grant me and mine permission to enter."
Indeed, dozens of guards had blocked her path, and short of killing her way through, Manon had no way in.
"You choose to ignore my orders. Why should I follow yours, wing leader?"
"You won't have a goddamned army to ride those wyverns if you lock them all up for your breeding experiments."
They were warriors. They were iron teeth witches. They weren't chattel to be bred. They weren't to be experimented upon. Her grandmother would slaughter him. The Duke merely shrugged.
"I told you I wanted Blackbeaks. You refused to give them to me."
"Is this punishment?"
The words snapped out of her. The Yellowlegs were still Iron Teeth, after all, still under her command.
"Oh, no.
Not at all. But if you disobey my orders again, the next time it might be.
He cocked his head, and the light gilded his dark eyes.
There are princes, you know, among the Volg. Powerful, cunning princes, capable of splattering people on walls. They've been very keen to test themselves against your kind. Perhaps they'll pay a visit to your barracks. See who survives the night. It'd be a good way to weed out the lesser witches. I have no use for weak soldiers in my armies, even if it decreases your numbers.
For a moment, there was a roaring silence in her head. A threat. A threat from this human.
This man who had lived but a fraction of her existence. This mortal beast.
Careful, a voice said in her head. Proceed with cunning. So Manon allowed herself to nod slightly in acquiescence and asked,
And what of your other activities? What goes on beneath the mountains circling this valley?
The Duke studied her, and she met his gaze, met every inch of blackness within it, and found something slithering inside that had no place in this world. At last he said,
You do not wish to learn what is being bred and forged under those mountains, Blackbeak. Don't bother sending your scouts in. They won't see daylight again. Consider yourself warned.
The human worm clearly didn't know precisely how skilled her shadows were. But she wasn't about to correct him. Not when it could be used to her advantage one day. Yet whatever did go on inside those mountains wasn't her concern. Not with the yellow legs and the rest of the Legion to deal with. Manon jerked her chin toward the dead soldier. What do you plan to use this shadow fire for? Torture? A flash of ire at yet another question. The Duke said tightly,
I have not yet decided. For now she will experiment like this. Perhaps later she will learn to incinerate the armies of our enemies.
A flame that did not leave burns. Loosed upon thousands. It would be glorious, even if it was grotesque.
And are there armies of enemies gathering? Will you use this shadow fire on them?
The Duke again cocked his head, the scars on his face thrown into stark contrast in the dim lantern light.
Your grandmother didn't tell you then.
About what? She bit out. The Duke strode toward the curtained-off part of the room.
About the weapons she has been making for me. For you.
What weapons? She didn't bother wasting time with tactical silence. The Duke just grinned at her as he disappeared, the curtain swinging enough to reveal Caltaine lying on a low bed covered in furs, her thin, pale arms at her sides, her eyes open and unseeing. A shell. A weapon. Two weapons. Caltaine, and whatever her grandmother was making. That was why the matron had stayed in the Fangs with the other High Witches. If the three of them were combining their knowledge, wisdom, and cruelty to develop a weapon to use against the mortal armies. A shiver skidded down Manon's spine, as she glanced once more at the broken human on the rug. Whatever this new weapon was, whatever the three High Witches came up with, the humans wouldn't stand a chance.
I want you all spreading the word to the other covens. I want sentinels on constant surveillance at the entrances to the barracks. 3-hour watch rotations, no longer. We don't need anyone passing out and letting the enemy slip in. I've dispatched a letter to the matron already.
Elite awoke with a jolt inside the airy, warm and rested and not daring to breathe. It was still dark, but the moonlight was gone, dawn far off, and in the blackness, she could faintly make out the gleam of snow-white hair and the flicker of a few sets of iron teeth and nails. Oh, gods. She planned to sleep for only an hour. She must have slept for at least 4. Abraxos didn't move behind her, his wings still shielding her. Since that encounter with Astarin and Manon, every hour, waking or sleeping, had been a nightmare for Elide. And even days afterward she caught herself holding her breath at odd moments. When the shadow of the fear gripped her by the throat. The witches hadn't bothered with her, even though she'd claimed her blood ran blue, but neither had Vernon. But tonight, she'd been limping back to her room, the stairwell dark and quiet. Too quiet,
even with the scraping of her chains on the floor. And by her door, a pocket of utter silence, as if even the dust mites had held their breath. Someone was inside her room, waiting for her. So she'd kept walking, all the way to the moonlit airy, where her uncle wouldn't dare go. The wyverns of the 13 had been curled up on the floor like cats or perched on their posts over the drop. To her left, Abraxos had watched her from where he'd sprawled on his belly, his depthless eyes wide, unblinking. When she'd come close enough to smell the carrion on his breath, she'd said,
"I need somewhere to sleep, just for tonight."
His tail moved slightly, the iron spikes clinking on the stones, wagging, like a dog, sleepy but pleased to see her. There was no growl to be heard, no glint of iron teeth readying to gulp her down in two bites. She would rather be gobbled down than face whoever had been in her room. Alid had slid down against the wall, tucking her hands under her armpits and curling her knees to her chest. Her teeth began clacking against each other, and she curled tighter. It was so cold in here that her breath clouded in front of her. Hay crunched, and Abraxo sidled closer. Elide had tensed, might have sprung to her feet and bolted. The wyvern had extended one wing toward her as if an invitation, to sit beside him.
"Please don't eat me,"
she'd whispered. He'd huffed, as if to say, "You wouldn't be much of a mouthful." Shivering, Elide rose. He seemed bigger with every step, but that wing remained extended, as if she were the animal in need of calming. As she reached his side, she could hardly breathe as she extended a hand and stroked the curving, scaly hide. It was surprisingly soft, like worn leather, and toasty, as if he were a furnace. Carefully, aware of the head he angled to watch her every move, she sat down against him, her back instantly warmed. That wing had gracefully lowered, folding down until it became a wall of warm membrane between her and the chill wind. She leaned farther into his softness and delightful heat, letting it sink into her bones. She hadn't even realized that she'd tumbled into sleep, and now, they were here. Abraxos's reek must be concealing her own human scent, or else the wing leader would have found her by now. Abraxos kept still enough that she wondered if he knew that too. The voices moved toward the center of the airy, and Alid gauged the distance between Abraxos and the door. Perhaps she could slip away before they noticed. "Keep it quiet, keep it secret. If anyone reveals our defenses, they die at my hand."
"As you will it,"
Sorrel said. Asterin said,
"Do we tell the Yellowlegs and Bluebloods?"
"No,"
Manon said, her voice like death and bloodshed.
"Blackbeaks only."
"Even if another coven winds up volunteering for the next round?"
Asterin said. Manon gave a snarl that made the hair on Alid's neck rise.
"We can only tug so much at the leash."
"Leashes can snap,"
Asterin challenged.
"So can your neck,"
Manon said. Now, while they were fighting, Abraxos remained unmoving, as if not daring to draw attention to himself while Alid prepared to hurry out. But the chains... Alid sat back down and carefully, slowly, lifted her foot just a little off the floor, holding the chains so they wouldn't drag. With one foot and one hand, she began pushing herself across the stones, sliding for the door.
"This shadow fire,"
Sorrel mused, as if trying to defuse the brewing storm between the wing leader and her cousin.
"Will he use it on us?"
"He seemed inclined to think it could be used on entire armies. I wouldn't put it past him to hold it over our heads." Closer and closer, Alid edged for the open doorway. She was almost there when Manon crooned, "If you had any backbone, Alid, you would have stayed beside Abraxos until we left." Chapter 32 Manon had spotted Alid sleeping against Abraxos the moment they'd entered the airy. And she'd become aware of her presence moments before that, tracking her from scent alone up the stairs. If Asterin and Sorrel had noticed, they made no comment. The servant girl was sitting on her ass, almost to the doorway, one foot in the air to keep her chains from dragging. Smart,
even if she'd been too stupid to realize how well they saw in the dark.
"There was someone in my room,"
Aleed said, lowering her foot and standing. Astarin stiffened.
"Who?"
"I don't know," Aleed said, keeping near the doorway,
even if it would do her no good.
"It didn't seem wise to go inside."
Abraxos had tensed, his tail shifting over the stones. The useless beast was worried for the girl. Manon narrowed her eyes at him. "Isn't your kind supposed to eat young women?" He glared at her. Aleed held her ground as Manon prowled closer, and Manon, despite herself, was impressed. She looked at the girl, really looked at her. A girl who was not afraid to sleep against a wyvern, who had enough common sense to tell when danger might be approaching. Perhaps that blood really did run blue. "There is a chamber beneath this castle," Manon said, and Astarin and Sorrel fell into rank behind her. "Inside it is a coven of Yellowlegs witches, all taken by the Duke to create demon offspring. I want you to get into that chamber. I want you to tell me what's happening in there." The human went pale as death.
"I can't."
"You can, and you will," Manon said. "You're mine now." She felt Astarin's attention on her, the disapproval and surprise. Manon went on. "You find a way into that chamber. You give me the details. You keep quiet about what you learn, and you live. If you betray me, if you tell anyone, then we'll toast to you at your wedding party to a handsome Volg husband, I suppose." The girl's hands were shaking. Manon smacked them down to her sides. "We do not tolerate cowards in the Blackbeak ranks," she hissed. "Or did you think your protection was free?" Manon pointed to the door. "You're to stay in my chambers if your own are compromised. Go wait at the bottom of the stairs." Aleed glanced behind Manon to her second and third, as if she was considering begging them to help. But Manon knew that their faces were stony and unyielding. Aleed's terror was a tang in Manon's nose as she limped away. It took her far too long to get down the stairs, that wasted leg of hers slowing her to a crone's pace. Once she was at the bottom, Manon turned to Sorrel and Astarin.
"She could go to the Duke,"
Sorrel said. A second, she had the right to make that remark, to think through all threats to the heir.
"She's not that ruthless."
Astarin clicked her tongue.
"That was why you spoke, knowing she was here."
Manon didn't bother nodding.
"If she's caught?" Astarin asked.
Sorrel glanced sharply at her. Manon didn't feel like reprimanding. It was on Sorrel to sort out the dominance between them now.
"If she's caught, then we'll find another way."
"And you have no qualms about them killing her? Or using that shadow fire on her?"
"Stand down, Astarin,"
Sorrel ground out. Astarin did no such thing.
"You should be asking these questions second."
Sorrel's iron teeth snapped down.
"It is because of your questioning that you're now third."
"Enough," Manon said. "Aleed is the only one who might get into that chamber and report. The Duke has his grunts under orders not to let a single witch near. Even the shadows can't get close enough. But a servant girl, cleaning up whatever mess..."
"You were the one waiting in her room," Astarin said.
"A dose of fear goes a long way in humans."
"Is she human, though?"
Sorrel asked.
"Or do we count her among us?"
"It makes no difference if she's human or witch kind. I'd send whoever was the most qualified down into those chambers, and at this moment only Aleed can gain access to them." Cunning. That was how she would get around the Duke, with his schemes and his weapons. She might work for his king, but she would not tolerate being left ignorant. "I need to know what's happening in those chambers," Manon said. "If we lose one life to do that, then so be it."
"And what then?"
Astarin asked, despite Sorrel's warning.
"Once you learn, what then?"
Manon hadn't decided. Again, that phantom blood coated her hands. "Follow orders, or else she and the 13 would be executed, either by her grandmother or by the Duke. After her grandmother read her letter, maybe it would be different. But until then..." "Then we continue as we've been commanded," Manon said. "But I will not be led into this with a blindfold over my eyes."
Spy. A spy for the Wingleader.
Aleed supposed it was no different than being a spy for herself, for her own freedom. But learning about the supply wagon's arrival and trying to get into that chamber, while also going about her duties, maybe she would get lucky. Maybe she could do both. Manon had a pallet of hay brought up to her room, setting it near the fire to warm Aleed's mortal bones, she'd said. Aleed hardly slept that first night in the witch's tower. When she stood to use the privy, convinced that the witch was asleep, she'd made it two steps before Manon had said, "Going somewhere."
Gods, her voice, like a snake hidden up a tree.
She'd stammered out an explanation about needing the bathing room. When Manon hadn't replied, Aleed had stumbled out. She'd returned to find the witch asleep, or at least her eyes were closed. Manon slept naked, even with the chill. Her white hair cascaded down her back, and there wasn't a part of the witch that didn't seem lean with muscle or flecked with faint scarring. No part that wasn't a reminder of what Manon would do to her if she failed. 3 days later, Aleed made her move. The exhaustion that had tugged relentlessly on her vanished, as she clutched the armful of linens she'd taken from the laundry and peered down the hallway. 4 guards stood at the door to the stairwell. It had taken her 3 days of helping in the laundry, 3 days of chatting up the laundresses, to learn if linens were ever needed in the chamber at the bottom of those stairs. No one wanted to talk to her the first 2 days. They just eyed her and told her where to haul things or when to singe her hands or what to scrub until her back hurt. But yesterday she had seen the torn, blood-soaked clothes come in. Blue blood, not red. Witch blood. Aleed kept her head down, working on the soldiers' shirts she'd been given once she'd proved her skill with a needle, but she noted which laundresses intercepted the clothes, and then she kept working through the hours it took to clean and dry and press them, staying later than most of the others, waiting. She was nobody and nothing and belonged to no one, but if she let Manon and the Blackbeaks think she accepted their claim on her, she might very well still get free once those wagons arrived. The Blackbeaks didn't care about her, not really. Her heritage was convenient for them. She doubted they would notice when she vanished. She'd been a ghost for years now, anyway, her heart full of the forgotten dead. So she worked and waited. Even when her back was aching, even when her hands were so sore they shook, she marked the laundress who hauled the pressed clothes out of the chamber and vanished. Aleed memorized every detail of her face, of her build and height. No one noticed when she slipped out after her, carrying an armful of linens for the Wingleader. No one stopped her as she trailed the laundress down hall after hall until she reached this spot. Aleed peered down the hall again, just as the laundress came up out of the stairwell, arms empty, face drawn and bloodless. The guards didn't stop her. Good. The laundress turned down another hall, and Aleed loosed the breath she'd been holding. Turning toward Manon's tower, she silently thought through her plan over and over. If she was caught, perhaps she should throw herself from one of the balconies rather than face one of the dozens of awful deaths awaiting her. No, no, she would endure. She had survived when so many, nearly everyone she'd loved, had not, when her kingdom had not. So she would survive for them, and when she left, she would build herself a new life far away in their honor. Aleed hobbled up a winding stairwell. Gods, she hated stairs. She was about halfway up when she heard a man's voice that stopped her cold.
"The Duke said you spoke. Why will you not say a word to me?"
"Vernon." Silence greeted him. Back down the stairs. She should go right back down the stairs.
"So beautiful,"
her uncle murmured to whomever it was.
"Like a moonless night."
Aleed's mouth went dry at the tone in his voice.
"Perhaps it's fate that we ran into each other here. He watches you so closely."
Vernon paused.
"Together,"
he said quietly, reverently.
"Together, We shall create wonders that will make the world tremble.
Such dark, intimate words, filled with such